Thanks for listening to the best of The Odd Couple podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 7 p.m. to 10 p.m. Eastern, 4 to 7 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for The Odd Couple at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR.
You're listening to the best of The Odd Couple with Chris Broussard and Rob Parker.
The question is, before the game, you saw a lot of articles on this, and you will see this anytime the Dodgers are in relative trouble or, you know, in the rest of the way, if they get to the World Series and throughout. Every time he takes the mound, people are going to wonder, is this the last time you see him in a Dodger uniform? Because he can opt out after this year.
This could be his last start at Dodger Stadium.
Yep.
You know, like today, there were fans talking about it. I was in the crowd, you know, walking around, and people were like, you think this is it? You know, asking, and I was like, it could be. I mean, sometimes you don't think about those things, but when you add it all up, say the Dodgers were to lose, and then they go to Milwaukee and lose and don't play again, then he could opt out, and he would be done in Los Angeles.
Have you gotten any sense from whether it was some of the reporters you were talking to, if you talk to anybody in the Dodgers organization, or even from what fans may be thinking, are you getting any sense for the feeling of whether the Dodgers intend to bring him back? I mean, obviously they want him back at the right price, but are they willing to break the bank? Because I think he makes, is he going to be $35 million that he would opt out of?
But it's his call.
So if he does that, he's going to obviously be looking for a huge payday. So do you think the Dodgers are looking like, hey, no matter what it is, we're bringing him back?
I'm just telling you as how hard it is to get pitching, and I get the frustration of Kershaw when it comes to the postseason. Don't get me wrong. If you're a Dodger fan, you're sick over the idea, Chris, that you have one of the greatest pitchers of our generation, right? Wearing
no
a Dodger
question.
Uniform.
No question.
But you didn't get a World Series. The Dodgers have won six straight NL West divisions, okay? They've been in position to get there, to win, and it just hasn't happened. Last year, they won seven games with the Astros, and it didn't happen. So the point really is, do you want to go back to the – and it's been 30 years since they've won a World Series, but what do you want to go back to where you're not even in the mix?
Well, that's the – if they lose Kershaw, he wasn't their best pitcher this year.
No, not this year, but in previous
– yeah, of course, previous years. But, you know, you're looking forward. Is he going to be your ace?
I'm going to give you the example that I'll give other people. I mean, that I've given other people. Everybody thought that Justin Verlander was finished in Detroit.
No question.
And what did the Tigers do? They moved him. Tigers are going this way, Chris, going south. And Justin Verlander helped win a World Series for the Astros.
He was huge, and he's huge now.
And he's huge now.
He's looking great.
So it's always one of those things. You know, a stud and an ace can have a couple of murky years, but it doesn't. He's not old or anything like where he's done and you're like, oh, well, he's 40 years old. You should get rid of him. No. I think you got to be careful when you're talking about a guy. When you put a guy of that caliber out every fifth day, Chris, you always have a chance to win. And you know what you also don't have? You don't have 8 and 10 game losing streaks.
Right.
Because every time he goes out there, you got a chance to win.
Yep.
And that's how good teams are built. That's really why good teams, because they don't lose 8 in a row. They don't lose 10 in a row. There's no way you're going to beat him twice in two starts. You know what I mean?
And in this day and age, he's so unique because we've seen great pitchers, you know, who are great for a 3-4 year stint. And then whether it's injury, a lot of guys we've seen go to new places and they don't pan out. Big time free agents get paid. You know, y'all remember Johan Santana?
Yep, came to the Mets.
Yeah,
he was a bust.
Yeah, I mean that happens quite often. He is unique in that, yeah, I get his postseason struggles, but during the regular season, he gives it to you. Every year. Now, this year, his velocity's down. Is it going to remain that way for the rest of his career? But he's still been a very effective pitcher. His ERA still below 3.0. I tell you what, I've kind of been feeling like, of course I want him back. Of course I'm willing to pay him big money. But I have felt like I would not bring him back at all costs. Like if the money is just crazy and somebody's outbidding me, then I may have to let him walk. But I really want to watch this postseason and see. Because the regular season, I'm good with him.
Right.
But if he can pitch like he did today, and I know, like you said, he was in trouble. He threw a lot of pitches early. It wasn't like he was lights out.
No. He had almost like 50 pitches through three innings. I mean, it was a lot.
But if he pitches well throughout this postseason, obviously if they win the World Series, but even if they don't and he pitches well, I'll feel a lot better about bringing him back than if he struggles. Like, if he struggled today, struggles in his next outing, gets in the World Series, struggles once or twice, then I have to question how much I want to pay him.
The other part is, you can say, I don't want to pay him a lot of money and we'll move forward or get somebody else. Who are you getting? You know, that's the next question. So it's one thing to get rid of somebody or be saying you don't want to pay him. Okay, but now who's the top of our rotation? Do we have a guy? Is it Walker Buehler? You know what I mean? Is he ready for that? He's a young pitcher.
I don't know if he's ready for that. As good as he is, I don't know if he's ready for that.
So if you really felt like you had somebody who could step in and be your ace, then you would be more apt to do something like that. I just would not give up. And a left-hander, you know how hard it is to get a good left-hander. Right. He's been unbelievable. I get the postseason stuff. Unless you have somebody who's going to step in and take his job, it's hard to let that guy walk.
And one thing I always say, and I say this in regards to basketball, and I think it's relevant for baseball as well, it hurts when you are a contender for 7, 8, 9 years, even start 5 years or whatever, and you don't get over the hump and win that championship. But years from that, once it ends and you fall off into irrelevancy, as virtually every team does at some point, and you have a decent stretch of years where you're not in the mix, you look back fondly at those years and are like, man, we didn't win it, but it was a great one. Patrick Ewing in New York never won a championship.
But the Garden was alive.
Right.
The Knicks were in the mix every year. You know that. Absolutely.
Yeah, and the Knicks would die for the Patrick Ewing era.
Well, they would.
Right, even Phoenix Suns with Steve Nash. They never even got to the finals.
Right.
They would die for Nash, Amari Stoudemire, Sean Marion, and that run they had.
And even the Knicks made it to the finals twice.
Yep.
They didn't win, but they were in the mix, and they went there twice. So fans could still hang on to that. They can't even make the playoffs.
Right, right.
And that's what I'm saying. When you're the Dodgers, you're looking at it and going, okay, we won 6 in a row. It's been kind of disappointing in the postseason, but where do we want to be? Do we always want to be there? And the fans in L.A., you know, they sell 3 million tickets every year. I mean, that's not the issue. It's about trying to win another championship. And it's been since 1988, which is just incredible when you think about this franchise.
No, it really is. For a flagship franchise, a team that's been good, you know, for several years, hasn't been able to get over the hump. And like I said, sometimes you can write that off as, hey, it's baseball. The best team doesn't always win. Sometimes you have slumps. Sometimes you have other team gets hot, or a pitcher's, you know, hot, or they got a better rotation, though not necessarily a better team than you. I don't know if you can say that with the Dodgers. And that's the thing about Kershaw. He's been a significant part of why they haven't gotten it done.
No. I said to people, the reason they lost last year, Chris, plain and simple, was Clayton Kershaw. In Game 5 of the World Series, the Dodgers spotted him 4 runs. He gave up those 4 runs to the Astros. Then the Dodgers, the next inning, gave him 3 more runs. And he gave those up. And the problem with that was, Chris, when he had 4 runs, you know what his record was when the Dodgers scored him 4 runs? His record before last year, Game 5, was 100 wins and 1 loss.
Wow.
So if you get him 4 runs, it was an automatic win. And that was only the second game in 102 decisions that he lost when he got 4 runs.
That's baffling.
It's unbelievable.
Yeah. Be sure to catch live editions of The Odd Couple with Chris Broussard and Rob Parker. Weekdays at 7 p.m. Eastern, 4 p.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
It has been a horrendous start for one John Gruden with the Oakland Raiders.
You mean the $100 million coach that they couldn't wait to get? That guy?
The guy that, let's face it, they felt was worth more money than Khalil Mack. Because that's what it came down to. You could have taken some of that money you gave him, and you would have been able to bring back Khalil Mack. Now, he had a lot to do with not bringing back Khalil Mack, though.
Right, but what did he just say about how they don't want to pay managers in baseball, but this guy signed an unbelievable record, $100 million contract.
Guaranteed.
For a coach.
Well, look, here's the thing. This is coaches in the NFL make a huge difference. The real top-notch coaches, they can come in and turn the team around pronto. We saw it with Andy Reid in Kansas City.
Yeah, but he can't win the big game.
But still, he makes you relevant. And let's see if he can win the big game.
No,
you
know, let's see. We've seen for the last 20 years.
He's still got elite teams that are going to contend for championships.
I don't buy into Andy Reid. I'm just telling you, I've seen enough of the
so
Andy Reid
story. So is it relevant
story.
That he has great regular seasons? Is that irrelevant? I mean, you just told me you got to break the bank for Clayton Kershaw,
who has big
regular seasons, but hadn't been able to get it done in the postseason.
There's a big difference when you have a coach who has a track record of having these teams. Remember, they went to four straight NFC championship games. It ain't like Chris; they went 1 year. The Dodgers have been in the World Series twice.
Yeah, but
over
they
the last
had a
couple
shot
years.
To be there the last 6 years.
But I'm talking about Andy Reid. I'm just don't buy into
So
him.
You would be more impressed with Andy Reid. His regular season record is the same, but he gets to, let's say he only gets to one AFC championship NFC championship game in Philadelphia. Maybe even two. You would be more impressed not with that than
no,
for
no,
him to
I,
get the four straight?
They don't even get there now. Go look at, he's lost, and I'll get it for you. I'll get all the numbers. Since he's been in Kansas City, they've lost like three or four home playoff games, Chris. All I'm saying is that they don't get it done, and he hasn't gotten it done. It's not like they've gone to the Super Bowl and lost.
But
they've lost in the first round where they're a good team.
But they are
Hey, Rob, I want you to look that up for me. Give me
Andy
Reid.
NFL, and they're relevant every year. Now, that said, there's something to be said for that. We were talking about that. With the Knicks and Patrick Ewing. They never won the big one, but they were relevant. That's all I'm saying.
After a while, I know we'll get the record, but I'm telling you, his record is like bad where he's lost home playoff game.
I mean, Peyton Manning's record was bad.
He's 11-13 all time. And Rob, give me what he's got done since he's been in Kansas City. He's 1-4. How many of those games are at home? It's like four games he's lost at home, Chris. That's all I'm saying.
So what are you trying to say? He's not a good coach?
I'm just saying I wouldn't bank anything on Andy Reid.
But you would bank on Clayton Kershaw.
I'm just telling you.
Would you bank on Peyton Manning?
You can't replace Kershaw is what I'm telling you. Steve Phillips just told you that.
Now it's a little different team, but thanks to Andy Reid. But when he came in, they were a horrible team, and he turned them around immediately. That's all I'm saying. You're right. He hasn't won the big game, so I can't sit here and say he's a championship coach. What I can say, though, is he's a very good coach, and he turns teams around.
Okay.
That's all I'm saying.
Okay. I'm just saying I'm out on Andy Reid.
But the point, you understand the point I'm making.
Right.
Harbaugh in San Francisco
turned him around.
A lot of times you bring in a new coach who knows what he's doing, and he takes a team that didn't look that good, and all of a sudden, Sean McVay.
I'm glad you said that because there's been a lot of coaches also who have gotten jobs and can't turn it around in 2 or 3 years because they're not good enough.
Right. And that's what I'm wondering about Gruden. This was a team that just 2 years ago was 12-4. And 6-10, they were bad last year, but it wasn't like they were 3-13.
Right.
And now they look worse than ever. And Gruden had to come out today and say to the media, we are not tanking.
That threw me off totally because I'm sorry. Why, Chris, would you even address that? My character, you telling me that I got to come out and prove to you that I'm not tanking?
Do
this
you
season?
Think he's tanking?
No, he hasn't traded anybody yet. Who's he trading? No, I'm just saying.
You serious?
Yeah. I don't think you
Khalil
think,
Mack?
No, but I'm saying but that was over a contract. But tanking means where you just like you just want to lose and because you want to get the top pick in the draft.
But almost half their starters from last year, he's moved on from.
No, but there's an
Michael Crabtree, there's Marshall Newhouse.
There's an ulterior motive, though, is that those are all the guys from their previous GM, right? I just forgot.
He's Reggie McKenzie.
Reggie McKenzie.
The current GM.
So what, right. But that's how you get rid of. You're getting rid of Reggie's guys. So then what happens next? You don't need Reggie, and then he could take over the whole thing.
Okay, so
I believe that.
So what's he trying to do?
He's trying to undermine Reggie McKenzie, saying his players are no good, and then he gets to buy the groceries and cook the food.
Well, I think he's doing that anyway.
That's what he's doing.
I think he's doing that anyway, but he may want to bring in more of a puppet. But isn't that tanking?
No.
I mean, he wants to loot, right? He's getting rid of his best players, whether they're that good or not.
I think
he's getting rid of them, and now he wants to lose, though, right?
Tanking is, I want the first pick in the draft, and you're down to the end of the season, and you have a shot at it. And your last four or five games, you start doing crazy things, playing rookie quarterback or making a move. Say you bench Derek Carr.
Did they play 10 rookies in their last game against Seattle and London?
I don't look at that as tanking. That's just my opinion. Tanking to me is they're not guaranteed the first pick in the draft. How are they tanking for
They're
what?
1-5. They could have the worst record in the league. No. I think he is tanking. And I'm not saying it's a terrible thing to do, and I think he's right to come out and deny it.
I don't think that should even be.
So you think he's out there trying to win every Sunday?
Yes, and I just think that, but he wants to be able to get complete control of the organization. And when you get a contract like that, and you get $100 million or whatever, and there's still a guy, Reggie McKenzie, there, who's the GM, who was there before you, that's not your guy. I guarantee you Reggie McKenzie will be replaced next year. And John Gruden will bring in his guy who he wants to be GM. I guarantee
you. I think that's very similar to tanking.
I don't.
I think he's trying to get – I mean, the trades they're talking about, now there's talk that they might trade Amari Cooper for what? Draft picks. So he wants to store up draft picks for the draft. I mean, that's what he got for Khalil Mack. And I think you're right. I think part of it is getting McKenzie out of there too. But Gruden has the final say anyway right now, whether they admit it or not.
But he's still there, and I'm just saying, because if that's the case, a lot of coaches would keep people. You're not going to keep – Reggie McKenzie's not going to stay there and not do anything. Do you know what I mean? And be like a puppet or a figurehead. He's not. So I bet you Reggie McKenzie's looking at what's
going on. You think Reggie McKenzie is calling the shots now or Gruden?
No.
That's what he is.
But he's getting rid of all – what you do is when Bill Parcells took over the Jets – when they were 1-15 under Rich Kotite. He turned the roster over. It was Kotite's one team, right? And what he did was, the next year, 90% of the players were gone. I mean, you decide to put in your own guys. That's natural. But in this case, he gets rid of Reggie McKenzie in the process.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Odd Couple with Chris Broussard and Rob Parker. Weekdays at 7 p.m. Eastern, 4 p.m. Pacific.
Odell Beckham Jr. just stays in the news. And a couple days ago, John Mara, the owner of the New York Giants, with his team struggling at a 1-5 pace or record, he comes out and he says that Odell Beckham Jr., in reference to his interview with Lil Wayne and Josina Anderson of ESPN, that he needs to do less talking and more playing. And then today, he tells New York Newsday, paper you used to write for, that he will have a sit-down with Odell Beckham to talk things out. Where do you think this is going?
Nowhere. Home dinner, maybe a show. I mean, what are you doing? Mara, go back and sit down. You gave him $65 million guaranteed. He's a young, brash. How many pictures on Instagram, Chris, can you take of yourself? Video of you dancing and tattoos can you get and all the other stuff and antics on the sidelines. So now he's going to sit across from an 85-year-old guy and have this guy tell you to do what? Stop it.
So you don't even think he should sit down with
him? No, what meeting? You're not going to stop change him. You're not, Chris. It's not going to happen. It's a waste of time and energy.
He can't mature. Odell needs to mature a little bit.
He can do that,
and
but that's going to happen on his own.
Mara's going to talk to him about
that. Happens on your own.
Sometimes, hear from somebody you respect. Now, does he respect John Mara? Who knows? But hear from somebody you respect. If Mara comes out at him the right way, and hey, Odell, we love you. We just gave you. We showed it. $65 million guaranteed. You're our future. We believe in you. We know at the end of the day, we're going to win more games with you than lose, and we're going to win big with you. But when we're struggling through a season like this, we just can't have all the distractions. And you see how it's working for you, how people are going at you on the talk shows, on the TV shows. They're taking away from your performance on the field, and all they're talking about is what you're saying.
He doesn't care
about
that.
So I'm just – that's how he should come at him, though. And, you know, respectfully – and see how it impacts Odell, because he needs to mature. I don't need to see him hitting his head on a fan and complaining, even if it's to himself.
He was warm.
I don't need to see the antics on the sidelines because it can upset some of your teammates.
So you shouldn't have given him the contract because he did the antics last year. He did the antics the year before that. He lifted up his leg like he was a dog. Peeing on a hydrant. Chris, do you remember that?
Yeah, I remember that. He hasn't done that since. That shows some maturation.
But all that stuff is who he is. You're asking him not to be who he is, and that's why I think it's ill-fated, a waste of time. Let me tell you something. The bottom line is somebody, some veteran in the clubhouse, in the locker room, will have more of a chance of getting to him than an 80-year-old owner who just gave him $65 million guaranteed. Because basically you're telling a millionaire how to act and what he should do and what he shouldn't do. Just like when they went and took that trip before the playoffs down in Florida, right? Instead, hey, they're going to go play in Green Bay in cold weather, and they're down in Tampa or wherever they were, Miami, on the boat with shirts off and Timberland boots. And you know, like,
you can even come at him like this. Look, here's the thing with Odell. When you talk the way he does, you put a target on your back, not only for the opponent, but for the media. And you mentioned it when he went down to Miami. Now, if he comes back and has a good game, nobody's saying anything about him being on the boat posing for pictures. It's fine. And here, after he sat down with Josina, he goes out himself, drops a pass on fourth down, has a punt bounce off of his leg and become a touchdown for the opposing team. Like, people are going to focus on those things when you talk so much. So if you talk this much, then you better deliver on the field. That's what I'm saying.
I just don't think that it's worth – it's just worth it. It's just worth it to just hear yourself talk. Because what if he comes back and pushes back and says, yeah, my numbers aren't good because we have a terrible – 37-year-old quarterback who looks like a 47-year-old quarterback, and you could talk about the offensive line all you want, and they got Saquon Barkley that was supposed to help and fix Eli Manning, right?
He ain't coming out like that.
Why not? I'm just saying.
He would come out like that because John Mara sat down with him?
I would push back at John Mara and say,
If you were Odell and Mara sat down. Now, he comes at you respectfully. This is the guy that made you a multimillionaire. If he sat down with you respectfully and just explained to you how you can show maturity. And look, here's the thing. Don't forget, Odell has shown that he can have self-control when he wants to. Did he not have self-control this summer?
That was just because he knew he was getting a deal.
Whatever the case, he showed when I need to, I can control myself.
But that's not the real Odell. The real Odell is the guy acting like a dog on the sidelines who last year kicked it, you know, knocked over the kicking fence. You remember that?
Is that the real Odell? Does Odell know who the real Odell is?
Yes, he does.
Because Odell himself, even with Josina.
Check his Instagram. That's the real Odell.
With Josina, he said, you know, I'm trying to clean up. I'm paraphrasing, but, you know, I made some mistakes in the past. He said he wants to change a little bit. He said it himself out of his own mouth.
That's just like.
So Mara's just giving him a little push.
It's just like women, they marry men. And they think they're the fixer. They're going to change the guy, right? Oh, I'll get him. I'll shape him around. I'll be able to. Or the same thing.
Maybe a guy thinks he'll do the same thing.
I'm just saying. They want to, or maybe a guy's trying to change a woman. You know what I mean? Like try to make them different. And you married her, or you know what I mean? This is who she is. Chris, you married your wife. All the flaws and all the other things that you've told me about, you know, you just got to accept them. Oh, I didn't mean to bring that
she
up.
She has no flaws. Yeah, what you talking about?
What you talking about, Willis? But you know what I'm saying, right? The same way your wife...
That's a nice analogy,
the way
but
your wife accepts your flaws. Right, right. The things that you do that probably drive her crazy.
The few that I have, you know.
Right. Yeah. The little minuscule amount that
I whatever,
have.
But you see what I'm saying. Hey, 877-99 on Fox is our number.
Yeah, give us a call if you want to weigh in on OBJ. Look, I'm not saying John Mara should take him out to the woodshed.
Right.
I'm just saying it might not hurt. I don't think it can hurt to have a talk with him. If it doesn't pay dividends and he goes out and is doing the same thing, so be it. But I don't think it can hurt. I think it's a good thing that needs to be done. Because Odell needs to mature. Look, does Odell want to end up? Now, he's got his guaranteed money. But does he want to end up like a Dez Bryant?
He got
a Chad Ochocinco.
He got $65 million.
But look at Dez Bryant is out of the league prematurely because nobody wants to put up with your antics. And if you lose a step, I'm done with you. If Odell starts dropping balls on the regular, teams are going to be done with him. You know, last summer when it was talked that they were going to trade him, weren't the reports saying teams didn't want him?
No, but they didn't want him because he wanted to get paid and they didn't want
to. None of it had to do with the antics.
No, it's more about they didn't want to give up the.
Odell they don't Beckham pay Jr. A receiver, is a top three receiver
they don't
in the
want
league.
To pay a receiver $65 million guarantee. It's the highest contract ever, and they knew that they didn't have to not only give up something, Chris, to get him in the trade, right? You got to give up something like a draft pick, right, a top pick. Yep. Then you got to turn around and pay him $65 million guaranteed.
So you think,
it was more the money.
You think it was all money. It was nothing to do with the attitude.
I said mostly money. It's still about not wanting to pay a guy that kind of money to be a wide receiver because there have been a lot of great wide receivers and you don't automatically win because you have a wide receiver.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com. And within the iHeartRadio app, search FSR to listen live.
Rob, with the NBA season starting, just like you've done Parker's power rankings,
yes,
as crazy and wild as they may be, I'm doing Broussard's. What is it called again?
Big Six. You don't even know the name of your own thing.
I was joking.
Your birthday. I know you're going to be 50
soon. Why did I get a drum roll? Why did I get a drum roll?
You don't even know what the name
of
his. You don't even know the name.
Broussard's Big Six.
Are you ready?
Hope you can take the heat like LeBron.
We're going big.
It's go time.
It's Broussard's Big Six.
All right. These are my Big Six storylines for this season. Rob Park, you were just telling us. Oh, we know the Warriors are going to win it. What's the big deal? There are tons of storylines to be excited about in the NBA. And here are my six that I'm most excited about. I've got regrets for Trae Young. I want to see, does he become Steve Nash? Does he become Steph Curry or a mixture of both? That'll have to wait, though. That didn't make it. Number six in my big six, Philadelphia. The development of Joel Embiid and Ben Simmons together.
They got smoked last night.
Can they become like Shaq and Penny on the court, or do they become like Shaq and Penny and ultimately end up getting divorced down the line? You know, or can they be this generation's, as I called them last year, they could end up being this generation's Magic and Kareem.
Mm.
So let's see. That's what I'm looking at. And then I also want to see Markelle Fultz. Is he going to be a bust? Or is this kid going to turn out to be a decent player?
How did he do last night?
Not well. I think, I don't know how many, five points
see,
or something.
I didn't see a shooting
didn't
line.
Didn't play much later in the game.
He started,
struggled.
Though, right.
Yeah, he started,
okay.
But he struggled. They're going to have to put in J.J. Redick in that starting lineup.
Already?
If this continues.
That's only one game. Come
at
on.
Number five, the Celtics, who looked great last night, but I'm watching the Celtics because I think it's a chemistry project. Last night, Jason Tatum was the best player, the leading scorer. Gordon Hayward didn't play exceptionally well, which maybe is to be expected. First game back from that horrific injury. Kyrie Irving didn't play well. So now, last year, it was Kyrie Irving and a bunch of young guys.
And you remember they got off to a great start with Kyrie.
Right.
Remember that?
But now, Kyrie's back. He's still the best player. But now, Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown aren't those young guys that just want to show they can play. Now they're thinking, Tatum's probably thinking I can be an all-star this year. Tatum's probably thinking, and I think he is better than Gordon Hayward. So can Hayward accept, if it comes to it, being a role player? Can Kyrie accept maybe not being the leading scorer?
I think you're just jumping the gun on the Kyrie thing. I just do.
I'm not saying he's not going to be happy. I'm just saying if he's not the leading scorer, can he handle it? All right, number four, Jimmy Butler in Minnesota. No surprise there. Is he traded? When is he traded? How will it affect their team? How will it affect Karl Anthony Towns and Andrew Wiggins? Do they go in the tank, or does this challenge them and bring out the best in them and they become better, tougher players? At number three, Kawhi Leonard in Toronto. I think he's got a great opportunity here. He could win the MVP. He could dominate the Eastern Conference. He's got a great team around him. They could be a team that could get to the NBA Finals. And if that happens, does it entice Kawhi Leonard to stay up north in Toronto? At number two, Golden State. Now, we know they're going to win the championship, Rob. Here's the question. Do you want to be historic Warriors, or do you want to be ho-hum? Ho-hum is we win 61 games, 64 games, and win the championship.
It's about winning
historic,
and losing.
Historic is we go for 74, break the all-time record, win the NBA championship, and then tell everybody we're the best team in NBA history.
The last time they did that, they lost the championship.
That's what I'm saying. Go ahead and prove you can complete the deal. And at number one, LeBron and the Lakers. There's so many storylines here. How good will the Lakers be? How will these team players fit together? They have no shooting. They got guys that want to dominate the ball. How will they fit together? Will LeBron be the MVP? In the preseason, he looked, I hate to even say this, but he looked like he'd mastered the game. He's hitting threes. He's going to the hole at will. He's throwing no-look passes. Will Brandon Ingram become the second star that LeBron needs? And what of Lonzo Ball? What happens to him? So I think there are great storylines this season en route to the NBA Finals, so I'm very excited. That's Broussard's Big Six. What you think?
Are you done?
I left you speechless.
Are you done? Okay. I mean, there's so many things, but ultimately,
I left you speechless.
Ultimately, we'll get back to the same place, and it'll be interesting. Yes, the Eastern Conference I am interested in. Not so much the Lakers. I think it's an overblown story.
Lakers aren't going to be fun to watch.
It's going to be overblown.
Where are you going to be the first game of the Lakers season?
I can't make it on Saturday.
Where you going to be? You will be there.